So tonight I thought I'd talk a little bit about a very important factor in the path called Kanti, which means both developing patience and endurance. And the idea is that the spiritual path, healing wounds, taking care of ourselves, beginning the long process of freeing and liberating ourselves from obsessive fears and worries to a place where we can be comfortable in our own skin and in our own mind is a very is a wonderful path, but it's not a short one. It's not, there is no such a thing as a short, quick way to healing wounds, liberating the mind from its habitual obsessive thinking, its panics, its anxieties, the stuff that we've put a lot of time in our lives into developing, unskillful habits. It all takes some time. And the good news is it does work. It's been working for 2,500 years, and I've hung around enough monks and practitioners to know that if we put the effort in and we're diligent, that we can find amazing relief that we never believed possible from our own, not only from our own stresses and fears and self-centeredness, but we can also achieve a sense of just ease and peace, which I don't think most of us dreamed was available. Now, unfortunately, that would all be great if it wasn't for the fact that we live in a culture that's just completely keyed up on immediate gratification. We live in the click here. Send this, you know, the remote control. That wonderful routine by my favorite comedian, Louis C.K., who, if you haven't seen it, it's a pretty famous routine, but he talks about years ago being on a plane when they first introduced high-speed internet bandwidth on the plane. And he's sitting next to some guy, and they're like, oh, you know, this is like the first time they've had it on a plane, high-speed internet bandwidth. They're flying, and they're using it on their computers, and about an hour into the flight, there's a message that comes on that says, well, we're reaching an area where that service will have to be stopped for a while. And the guy next to Louis C.K. goes, this is bullshit. In other words, he's complaining about something that he didn't even know existed a half an hour ago. And, you know, like when our phones, our smartphones, you know, don't get messages or, you know, we get in a dead zone. We're like, this is bullshit. And I think, wow, you know, I mean, really, like the bulk of my life, the idea of walking around with a phone that you can just call and know where you are and have a guided map locating you. And this is like just magical stuff that we take for granted like this. So it's really increasingly rare in our vocabulary of living that we can subsist with a path or follow a path that is extremely gradual. The few times in life we do it, it's really just in when we exercise or when we heal wounds that are injuries. In both cases, when we exercise, we sort of, unless we're idiots, we go to the gym, and when we first start working out, we pretty much don't expect to see any visual improvement immediately. We sort of know that this is going to be a course that will take, you know, a considerable time. In my case, it's still not showing up. My entire years of working out have been entirely unfazed because there is absolutely no external proof that I've been doing anything. I'm just doing it now, realizing it's just a matter of faith that somehow it's got to be doing me some good, even though I'm never going to see any external, you know, reward for it. So, you know, when we learn a new skill, how to play an instrument, you're going to suck at first. Certain people can pick up a guitar and strum it and make it seem like they're naturally good at it. But the bulk of us, when we try to learn something new, we really suck for a very long time. And then we go to the next stages where we suck less. But there's like a long time where we don't see any rewards for our endeavors. Or certainly the rewards for doing things the shortcut way are much more apparent. When we're healing a broken, you know, bone or something like that, the first part, just medicating it, bandaging it up, is very fast. And it seems like, okay, this is going to be a short-term thing. And then, you know, there's the time when you're not using it. And then there's the rehab, which takes a long while to develop the muscle tone and the strength and where the bone becomes weight-bearing again and stuff like that. Now, when we're talking about emotional woundings from rejections and abandonments in childhoods and not feeling good enough and stuff like that, these woundings can take a really long time to heal. Looking into them, investigating them, being with them, giving them the attention they deserve through our spiritual practice, these are the way we heal. We don't heal wounds by just putting them in a cast, you know, hiding them away from being exposed, from never taking risks again with other people. That's not the way we heal. We heal by opening them up after a while and looking into them and feeling the sadness that's there. But it's a very long practice. It's not a practice of just like, ooh, I felt my sorrow, that must mean I'm on the mends. Yeah, I was really in touch with something really, really big in that retreat. That must be it. Unfortunately, it requires going back and back and back and making these feelings feel safe enough that we can be with them, where they can be heard, where they can be felt, and then over time they begin to dissipate. But it's a very slow process. We're used to the potato chip approach to life. Which, you know, potato chips actually, when you get down to them, no single potato chip anybody's ever wanted to eat. It's just, when you eat it, it's the next one, and then the next one. It's actually the process of eating that we like. The potato chip itself is just this thin little piece of cardboard with salt on it that melts away. But when we're eating it, we're never actually going, oh, this one's really good. It's just like, the next one. We're used to the magic bullet, the thing, just the consuming and the immediate response of, like, you know, you know, when we take medication and the pain goes away, we take ibuprofen and something goes away. We're used to immediate visual results. When we're feeling stressful, we're used to, you know, having a drink or, you know, something, or turning on the television or buying something, shoes, whatever. Make my boredom, my confusion go away. Make these feelings go away. That's what we want. That's why so much of the world points us in the direction of distraction. What we're doing is distracting ourselves from these moods and feelings that we don't want to get in contact with, we don't want to give attention to or awareness towards. And so when we have a spiritual practice which is not diverting ourselves outwards and is bringing awareness within, we are really dunking our face into a lot of difficult sensations that we're used to running away from. Like, you know, I feel lonely. I feel disconnected with people. I feel a lack of purpose in my life. I feel a sense of something's missing in my life. All these feelings are very real, but when they arise, we're used to distracting ourselves and making them go away, picking up the phone and immediately calling somebody or going to a movie or just delving into workaholism. So to do the real work of actually looking into and making, touching these feelings in the body, touching them in the mind, and opening up to them, and then really working with them is a long-term process. And so Conti, or patience, is about giving ourselves the encouragement to keep going. To keep going. To keep showing up in our meditation. To keep, you know, opening ourselves up for investigation. There's so many times when we sit down and meditate where there's going to be things pulling us away from it. The Buddha said we can expect five. He said there will always be two external things. There will be the things out there in the world that we like and the things out there in the world we don't like. And those two things will be pulling us away from meditating and from body awareness. So already we've got those two distractions, the people that we really want to hang out with and be with, and the people that are driving us nuts, or the things and work that we want to take care of and get rid of. So we've got already that. But then on top of that, we've got physical agitation. So much momentum in life. So much doing and busyness and racing through and being on a timetable and trying to get to certain places creates this momentum in the body where when we try to be comfortable in our own skin, we just feel the body's like, what's happening here? I'm not doing anything. This kind of sucks. I'm used to moving. You know, I'm doing things. Now you want me to, you know, this is wrong. It's like this agitation. It's not even aimed at anything. It's just like, holy shit. I'm not looking at anything. I'm not staring at a TV. This is wrong, you know. Fuck this. And then, so there's agitation. And then there's tiredness. There's like sleepiness. There's like feeling, oh, okay. When I stop moving, that could only mean one thing, sleep. That's what you do when you stop moving, you sleep, you nap. Okay, it's nappy time. Wait a second, that guy's up there with the tattoos, he's still talking. Like he wants me to meditate. This is, what? No. That can't be right. That's wrong. So, and then, of course, there's like all the, finally the Buddha said to expect just enormous amounts of doubt. Doubt both in the spiritual practice, but even more so, the Buddha said, self-doubt. Most of us by now, we see, well, meditation has been working for 2,500 years. It's got a lot of scientific, there's realms and realms of books written about how good it is for relieving stress and how good it is for reducing the wear and tear we take on the body and for in all sorts of cases from anxiety attacks to post-traumatic stress disorder to even heart ailments, just how important meditation is as part of a healing path. But, you know, beyond that, beyond just that, we can feel that, all right, I know that it works, but it won't work for me. I'm the one. I'm special. I'm it may work for all these other people that they test and all these, and it works for those monks and those other people around me here, but there's something about me that's immune to finding peace. Not going to happen. My mind, I'm complex. That's what it boils down to. These other people, they may be smart, but they're not as complex as my mind. So, what are the tools that we use to buck ourselves up, to keep ourselves moving? Basically, a few I'm going to go over tonight to develop patience and endurance over the work so that we'll be energized. The first is, it's really important when, first of all, when we meditate, to note each time you've developed any peace, any serenity, any calmness. It's really important to, even if your meditation has been 20 minutes of just jittery mind jumping all over the place, to get to a place where you can pay attention and note the peace that you've developed. This is getting in contact with the foothold you're making in developing serenity. It's very, very easy to just get caught up at first during the early stages in how difficult it is, and to notice all the times when there was the mind was jumping around, or there was boredom or whatever, and to lose track of those few moments where, for the first time in that day, your mind was quiet. There was a freedom from a worrying thought or from a self-obsessed thought. Even during the rest of the day, when you're mindful, when you're just having any spiritual practice, getting a foothold in your life, just to notice those periods of time when the mind feels spacious and relaxed and not agitated. We're so used to giving focus to the times when we're upset and worried and bent out of shape. But we find it very difficult to note the times when there's relative peace, because we're being asked basically to note, in other words, an absence of agitation. But it's really important to be able to do that, because the more you note the times when your mind is quiet, when there is peace, that will come in extremely handy during those times when the mind kicks up doubt and kicks up the sense of, oh, why do I have to do this again today? Why do I have to cut out space just to be peaceful and calm? Then if you have this memory of, oh yeah, I remember, I'm actually beginning to see or carve out a space inside where I feel secure and I feel peaceful, that's a really powerful incentive. The second is when moods and discouraging and frustration comes around, it's really important to not identify with it. Everybody experiences frustration. Everybody experiences disappointment and agitation. There is no emotion that you are capable of experiencing that is not universal. It's in everyone. There's a wonderful scientist, Paul Ekman, who's established the transcultural foundations in all of human emotion, the emotional vocabulary. We only have so many different shades, and they're transcultural. And we all get them. We all get shame. We all get doubt. We all get fear. We all get a sense of satisfaction. We all have different shades of self-centeredness. There's nothing new in your mind. we get caught up in the thoughts and the words that we put our thoughts in because they give the appearance of uniqueness. Oh, what's going on in my mind? You would not believe. Well, actually, believe me, I would. You could tell me you want to kill everyone in your life, but it wouldn't surprise me because everybody has had just anger and resentment and unsocial thoughts. It's really not about you. No matter how much you want to take them personally, no matter how much you want to believe they're yours, they're not yours. They're just stuff that arises in everyone. And the more we reflect on this, the more when these moods come along, like, I want this work to go faster. I want to be able to fall into a meditation that's like a monk's meditation right now. When that agitation comes floating, you can just say, hi. Oh, it's you. When the bad moods of like, oh, I suck, I really blew it, I really blew my life. That's like a storm front. That's really like a storm front. That's like a long, slow moving. It's like, that can take a few days. You're laughing at, I really blew it this time. And it's really shitting down on you, Lorraine. It's like, oh yeah, that's floating through. But the moment we stay in the body, and we stay grounded, and we breathe, and we keep just that little bit of difference or distance from the moods, and we keep on reminding ourselves, everybody goes through this. This is just something that passes through everybody. And we keep that little bit of disidentification, non-becoming one with that, then any mood can pass through. We can then begin to investigate moods that are passing through. For example, I've found that boredom is never what it seems to be. I've been on long retreats. And I used to think that boredom was the absence of things to focus my mind on. Like, there wasn't enough interesting shit going on. That's not what boredom is. Boredom is, I'm used to distracting my mind with television or books or whatever. And when I take that stuff away, then there's all this interesting shit going on inside of me that I don't really want to feel. And so I'm like, hey, wait, who took the television away? Who took the book? Where's the Rolling Stone magazine? Where's this bullshit for me to read? Boredom is not an absence of stimuli. Boredom is stimuli we don't like. Big difference. There's a whole bunch of stuff churning in there. Anxiety, discomfort, what am I doing here? And none of that stuff we really want to listen to or pay attention to. So we look for things to distract ourselves. And when they're gone, then we say, I'm bored, I got to do something. You're not bored. You're just filled with a lot of stuff that you don't really want to listen to. That's what happens when we investigate. Really important to note is that moods are not fait accompli like we think they are. We tend to think that moods are just these big things that wash over us, that we have no say in. Actually, over a long term of spiritual practice, I've discovered that just like the Buddha said in his teachings on citta, he said that everything that arises is caused. And if we investigate enough, we begin to find the causes behind our moods. The Buddha also went on to say, look in certain locations, look at the thoughts you were thinking right before that mood arose. Look at the expectations you carried in to the world before that mood arose. Look at the way you're perceiving the world before that mood arose. In other words, if I'm thinking a lot about my financial insecurity, guess what? What always follows next? You suck. The big you suck cloud comes up. I've blown it. When I'm thinking about gratitude for all the stuff I've got going on in my life and for the connectedness I have with so many spiritual practitioners, that huge dark mood cloud that has been birthed by my worries about money doesn't come into being. When I'm focusing my mind on disappointment with other people, slights, then moods of resentment and anger and feeling defensive and at odds with the world arise. If I'm bringing too many expectations that the world should behave exactly the way I want the world to behave, then a sense of outrage arises. You ever go into the subway and you bring these expectations like, kids should get up and offer their seats to little old ladies. It doesn't happen. Right? But if I hold onto that expectation, then the mood that follows is one of frustration and outrage with the world. You go in the subway and people are sitting, taking up three seats. You can either greet that with, oh, that's really funny, you know what I mean? Okay, I'll have to stand, because I'm not going to sit on this guy's lap, you know? But if I go into this interaction with, how dare this person, you know, then I'm bringing in these expectations that are giving birth to, you know, and you can say, well, people should only sit in a way that they take up one seat, or people should give up their seats for old people. People should, but there is no should. What we're talking about is simply, what are we doing that's bringing about the suffering that makes spiritual practice and makes our lives so difficult? So we can investigate all of this. Finally, it's also really, really important when we find it's really difficult to give time to our spiritual practice. I've found that in our culture, we tend to use up so much of our effort and energy in our work. We live in a city where people define themselves by their career, where our sense of identity is mixed up entirely with what we do. It's really kind of extreme. And while no one is by any means suggesting, throwing in the towel, there's a way to show up for work and do our jobs diligently that doesn't use up all of our energy and doesn't create so much stress in our lives that we can't put our efforts into our practice at other points. The simplest way of describing it is refraining from getting our self-identity caught up in our jobs. I can show up for a job, do a project, but the moment I start mistaking it for me, and when people are reviewing the stuff I do, they're reviewing me. And when I think my value as a human being is mixed up, the moment I take things at work personally as if they're attacks on me, then it gets to a point where I'm expending so much energy defending myself at work that when it comes time to go home and find peace, I've already used up all of the energy I have. So it's really important to develop a way to show up for our responsibilities, but show up in a way where we're not getting caught up in defending stuff, defending our turf at work, as if our very lives depend on it. It's playing our jobs like it's a game. We want to do well. We want to do everything in life well, but we don't have to take anything personally. And when we don't get caught up, then we have so much more energy and endeavor in us then, so that our days become so much more richer. So those are some of the tools. finding peace within, really noting it, noting when we're aware of the body during the day, just feeling good for any foothold we have in bringing peace to the mind. Experiencing our moods and our frustrations and our discomforts and our doubts with the practice as universal rather than as personal. Taking time to investigate them, see how they affect us, and see what we're doing that's bringing up this constant, these bad moods or these challenging frustrations. And taking care of ourselves in the rest of our lifestyles, making sure that we're not only being really mindful in how much we become caught up in our work, but also making sure that we're sleeping and eating and taking care of ourselves. In the long term, these are the practices that will allow us to heal emotionally, to do the work, so that we can find peace within. So I thank you very much for listening. I hope there was something that was interesting tonight for you to ponder. And now's